This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Whether you like to shop or not, there is one retail sector that we all frequent frequently. Grocery stores. We all have to eat, and you've probably noticed, if you keep tabs on such things, a lot of your income is spent on food. Perhaps you've taken note of all the new grocery chains coming to town. Well, for those of you who clip coupons and watch for sales, the increased competition in Charlotte among grocers is probably good news, because with more options come lower prices. But grocery store wars that we find ourselves in have also resulted in some casualties. Homegrown Healthy Home Market has waved the white flag and closed its doors. Low-cost German grocer Lidl, which first arrived in town last year with big expansion plans, has made a slight retreat, pulling back from those plans. Even venerable hometown store Harris Teeter decided to close one of their Ballantyne locations. And then there's Amazon's entry into brick-and-mortar supermarkets with their acquisition of Whole Foods. They cut prices almost immediately at the chain that some referred to as Whole Paycheck. But this is the marriage of unusual partners. So is it working? We're going to examine that this hour to find out where we stand in the battle for our food dollar. Katie Peralta is back with us. She writes about business and retail for the Charlotte Observer, and she is in our Spirit Square studio. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning to you. Joining us by phone is supermarket analyst Phil Lempert, founder of Supermarket Guru, who got up very early to join us from Santa Monica, California. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
And also with us by phone from Boston is Mike Paglia, who is director of Retail Insights with Kantar Retail. He follows the grocery store wars as well. Welcome, Mike. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So for years, Katie, let me start with you because it would get the hometown look here. For years, Harris Teeter was able to keep out almost all the other major players and minimize a lot of stores that had been here for a while. Bilo, Food Lion, Winn-Dixie, Hannaford's tried to come in for a minute and a half. A&P was here for a while. Then they kind of went away on their own. But when Publix finally got a foothold in our market, the dam seemed to have begun to break here. Was that a coincidence? Did Publix success encourage other grocers that they had a shot? What happened?
I think that all of these grocery companies would tell you that more competition is a good thing, and that's obviously the cheery look at things. But at the same time, we are seeing that more competition means more competitive pricing for customers. That means cheaper.
But why now? What happened? Because for all those years, Harris Teeter was the king. Nobody could come in here and make a major fuss. They could make some little puddle waves, but not a big ocean wave. So what happened?
Yeah, all this disruption is coming at a time when Charlotte's population growth is exploding, and I think that that's no coincidence either. Millennial shopping habits are certainly changing the ways that grocers market to younger shoppers. At the same time, Publix, it has to be said that Publix goes after the same exact customers as Harris Teeter. You know, it's a little bit higher price point than a Food Lion. It's a little bit lower than Whole Foods. Of course, there are exceptions to those generalizations, but both of those two, Harris Teeter and Publix, have started offering a lot more organic, natural products in order to appeal to some of the younger demographics who are concerned about health.
So that's here, and we do have a growing population and a growing millennial population. Phil, this is the third program that we've done on grocery store wars, and every time something's new about it, but each time new players have entered the market. Is this unique to Charlotte, or is this expansion of grocery shopping opportunities something that's happening in most places around the country?
Well, certainly it's happening around the entire country. But also, just to pick up on what Katie was saying, also let's not forget that Kroger bought Harris Teeter.
Right.
And that really changed the dynamic of Harris Teeter a bit. And while Kroger is a very good chain, they lost some of their local appeal. So I think that from a consumer standpoint, consumers for the first time were actually willing to go to other stores as well. Because it was now owned by this, you know, corporate monolith. But if we look around the country, there's more competition than ever before. More stores are renovating, they're building. You mentioned Lidl before. Aldi and Lidl are really becoming a powerhouse. We're seeing more stores put in grocerants. There's no question that it's probably the most exciting time that we've seen in supermarkets than ever before. They're offering more services, and again, to Katie's point, with millennials, with Generation Z, these are very food-involved generations. These are people who are passionate about food, want to know everything they can about food, and as a result, it's really shifting how retailers are thinking. They're now becoming a lot more than just real estate agents that are piling it high and selling it cheap. They've got to have some skin in the game. They've got to be curating products. They really have to step up their game if they want to stay in business.
So when you just said it's an exciting time in the grocery store business, is that for the customer or for the grocers themselves? Is it as exciting for them to have to do all this that they didn't used to have to do to attract customers, or is it just exciting for the customer?
Well, I think it's exciting for both, but on the retailer side, I think if you're over 55 and you've been working in grocery for a long time, you aren't loving this. But what we're doing is we're attracting a whole bunch of new people who never thought working in retail would be cool. I mean, we've got retailers like Hy-Vee in the Midwest who are attracting people from Stanford and Harvard to come work, you know, in their corporate offices. So I think that it really depends on how long you've been in the grocery business. But if you've been there for a long time, you know, it's not real exciting. You're looking to get out.
Yeah.
But if you're just getting into it, it's really game-changing because of what Amazon is doing. If you look at what INS is trying to do over in Europe, I mean, it's really changing the dynamics.
Katie, he mentioned the Kroger purchase of Harris Teeter. Do you think most local people even think about that? Do you think they've noticed a change? Do you think they're aware that Harris Teeter is not a local operation anymore? The only thing I've noticed is that Schweppes ginger ale in the 6-ounce bottles is no longer available. That must be a Kroger distribution thing.
It might be, or it might be the fact that it wasn't selling. Maybe you were the only one buying
it
before.
It could be. But it really ticks me off.
So the acquisition closed only in 2014, which is rather recent, you know. So the changes started to happen at Harris Teeter rather quickly, and some of the biggest changes were the price cuts. So if you're a regular Harris Teeter shopper, one would surmise that that would be a good thing since your, you know, bag of groceries is a little bit cheaper. However, you know, a lot of people, same deal with Belk and Family Dollar. This company that they've known for so long in Matthews is no longer in Matthews anymore. It's owned by Kroger. It's the behemoth that came in. And, you know, there have been layoffs at corporate. I'm aware of that. I think that being the hometown of, you know, this retailer, it kind of changes the dynamic a little bit. People have an affinity for Harris Teeter, like they have an affinity for other North Carolina brands like Bojangles and Krispy Kreme. You know, I think it depends on who you ask about Harris Teeter. Probably a lot of younger people or recent transplants might not think about the Harris or the Kroger acquisition all that much. But the folks who've been here for a long time will complain about some of the changes that might not be as noticeable to other people.
So, Mike Paglia, the two words that came up a moment ago were Aldi and Lidl. These are two new names to most Americans and two new names in Charlotte, relatively new. Aldi's been here for a while. Lidl is a newer entry, I suppose. Not only are they lower cost, they're from across the ocean. Is this, the arrival of these chains, particular to Charlotte or particular to growing American cities, or is it also happening all over the country?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I think it's important to realize first that Aldi's been here in the U.S. for 40 years now.
Oh, my God.
And I jokingly refer to them as kind of the sleeping giant of retail, insofar as, I mean, they already have almost 1,700 stores across the eastern half of the U.S. So their arrival is not exactly new. I think what brings Aldi to the forefront certainly is Lidl's arrival. I mean, they've been arch rivals all across Europe for decades now, and so I think the U.S. is really kind of the latest battlefield. But I think what you're going to see is, and indeed we've already seen this now with Lidl being here for 6 or 7 months or so, Aldi and Lidl, the two retailers together, are kind of in this getting into this pattern where they're trying to kind of one up each other. You know, one retailer emphasizes fresh produce, and then another retailer responds. You know, Aldi brings in Instacart, Lidl brings in Shipt. So these two retailers together are kind of playing off of each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to be an accelerant to a lot of those trends, those changes that we've already seen that indeed are happening nationally. But I think what we're seeing in the Mid-Atlantic and certainly in Charlotte is just a perfect illustration of that.
Are there any American grocery chains that have a footprint in Europe? Because we have these two European, particularly German, chains that seem to be staking out vast swaths of territory in the United States. What's up with that?
Yeah, I mean, the closest example certainly is Walmart. They have their ASDA business unit over in the UK. Even though they were they're certainly one of the main players in the UK, but they've actually seen their leadership position erode quite substantially over the last couple years as Aldi and Lidl have combined to, you know, siphon off hundreds of millions of dollars in volume per year, not only from ASDA, but also from, you know, other leading UK retailers like Tesco and Sainsbury's and Morrison. So, but to answer your original question, yeah, it's not exactly a one-for-one trade.
Right.
We don't see a lot of U.S. retailers going over to Europe.
So give us the lay of the land grocery-wise in Charlotte, Katie. I try to come up with all the grocery stores that I could think of that are operating here. Harris Teeter, Publix, Food Lion, Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, some other major players as well. Which chains seem to be growing and adding stores? Which chains seem to be diminishing their presence here? I know that we had the closing of Healthy Home Market. They just completely gave it up. What's growing? What's shrinking?
Publix is definitely growing and rather quickly at that. Harris Teeter is still opening stores in the Charlotte area, although we did see them close a South Charlotte location as well as one of their 301 Central alcohol stores. Walmart has been closing some of their neighborhood market locations around the country, including at least one in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically their version of a grocery store. Some of the regional/local grocers like Healthy Home Market that you mentioned have started to scale back just because they can't compete with the lower prices.
And I didn't mention Fresh Market and Reed's. Where do they fall in all of this?
So Fresh Market was acquired in 2015 by a private equity group. I can't answer this question very well, but
okay,
you haven't seen a lot of changes there in that not a lot of price differences, not a lot of store closures that I'm aware of. The smaller specialty gourmet grocery stores like Reed's are growing fairly quickly. Now, they don't compete directly with a Harris Teeter and Whole Foods because they have that local selection. They have an entire restaurant portion to them. But there is certainly something to be said about how they kind of appeal to a different, maybe higher-end demographic.
I only have a minute left in this segment. Phil Lempert mentioned a minute ago that the purchase of Harris Teeter by Kroger, which may have dented its hometown feel for some people in Charlotte. But what about the other side of that coin? Has its marriage to Kroger given them greater access, better distribution, lower more bargaining power to lower the prices, et cetera, and maybe even increase selection in the aisles? Has that happened?
Definitely. They've been able to kind of optimize their supply chain to get items to grocery stores faster. They've implemented different changes like they have gas stations at some of their locations now. They have entire beer centers with growlers and things like that. So it's certainly the look and feel of Harris Teeter after Kroger has certainly changed.
So we have more chains coming in. We have more selection at lower prices in many cases. How long can this go on? Where is the sweet spot? We'll talk about for grocers, I suppose, because our sweet spot is zero. We'll come right back and talk about that in a second at Charlotte Talks. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's Store Wars today. Our grocery store wars underway. Katie Peralta is here, a retail and business reporter for the Charlotte Observer, joining us by phone. From Boston, Mike Paglia, director of Retail Insights for Kantar Retail. Phil Lempert is here, supermarket analyst and founder of supermarketguru.com. Phil, you have said that Charlotte may have too many grocery stores, aside from the fact that there has been a Harris Teeter about every mile and a half around where in any direction you choose to turn. Why do you think that we have too many stores?
Well, as Katie pointed out before, what we see is we see a lot of influx of really smart, really hip people coming to Charlotte. So a lot of these retailers want to get there before the people get there. So I think that while it might be overstored right now, I think in 2 to 5 years, you'll really see that it's the perfect amount of stores.
Hmm. So they're scrambling to find equilibrium, the sweet spot here in terms of how many is necessary as the city continues to grow and change in terms of where people are choosing to live?
Well, yes and no. I think that they want to have their brand established. Mm-hmm. I think they want to have a stakehold in the market because it's really hard once somebody moves there and they start making their habits, their shopping habits, it's hard to get them to switch. And then you get into price wars and so on. So it's just much easier if you can be there before they get there.
Yeah, more stores, more brands means more competition, Mike. And competition not only means more choice for shoppers, but it also means one would presume almost always lower prices. Grocery margins are pretty thin, aren't they? How far can a grocery store cut and stay in business?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, and I think that's, you know, kind of the perpetual challenge of being a grocery retailer. Certainly, you know, we've seen how, you know, grocers have to get more and more creative in terms of where they can, you know, try to find cost savings in their system, whether it be in supply chain, whether it be in sourcing, whether it be in marketing, as a way to you know, maintain those margins, because inevitably they're going to have to lower prices. I mean, this is something that a lot of, whether you're talking about Kroger or Harris Teeter or Food Lion, I mean, everybody had to deal with this 20, 25 years ago when Walmart really started to pick up steam. I think you're seeing another round of that now. You know, there was a very interesting study that just came out recently saying that, you know, Lidl's arrival here in the U.S. has forced competitors, certain competitors, to lower their prices in their stores with Lidl nearby up to 50%. I mean, that's huge. And they can kind of take the hit on that in a limited scope, but you know, I think you know, we're seeing again, we're seeing this continued price compression that is going to really continue to put the squeeze on grocery retailers and consequently on suppliers and manufacturers.
In some markets, when Walmart has opened a super center and they have these big grocery stores, they kill the traditional grocers in the area. That has not happened here. I'm not sure why, but it didn't happen here. What has been, Katie, the impact of Walmart and Sam's Club and Costco and, to a small degree, Amazon.com?
Here in Charlotte? That's a good question. I don't know if I could answer it. I don't know if I've been here long enough to speak to that or done this job long enough.
Well, Harris Teeter, let's just talk about them for just a second, because I was making a joke a second ago, but they are within arm's reach. If you hold your arms out and turn in a circle in any direction, you can put your fingertip on a Harris Teeter, on a different Harris Teeter. They're like every mile and a half. They have a new store on South Boulevard, relatively new store on South Boulevard in the South End area. So they're growing and they changed that concept. But as you mentioned, they closed that 201 Central Beer and Wine store in Huntersville. They closed their one of their Ballantine locations. Why are they growing and closing at the same time?
Well, if you look at where Charlotte is growing most quickly, it's in those close-in neighborhoods like South End, Dilworth, Myers Park, Noda, Plaza Midwood. Ballantine is certainly growing, but if you look at a map of Harris Teeter stores, the location that closed was sandwiched between two others. One was half a mile away, and another was like 2 miles up the road. The one that closed is, I think, a former Lowe's food store or a former Bylow or something like that. So, you know, maybe we don't need two Harris Teeters half a mile down the street from one another. And I think that, you know, looking at where to place a grocery store is a very scientific thing. I think that it's really interesting. I have never been in a room when these discussions go on, but I know it's very calculated. You know, they look at demographics, they look at population growth, and they look at, you know, where people are spending their money. And so if they're looking to invest more in these fast-growing young areas, I think it probably makes sense.
Let's go back to
Mike.
Yes.
Mike, I'm sorry, if I can just add to something that Katie just said. Let's not forget, that's one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is also real estate. It could be that the lease was up on some of these locations, and they really didn't want to put the money in because of what Katie said, that there might have been other factors, that the store was too close to another one, and so on. But the other side of it is the financial real estate side of it, that these a lot of these stores are old, a lot of the store leases are coming up, and they've got to make a decision, do they want to pump that much money into a store that's so close to another new store?
Good point. Let's talk about Aldi and Lidl. It's not just low prices, although that's what they make their name on, and I suppose that's why people want to try them out, at least initially. And you've done a lot of research into Aldi and Lidl, Mike. Lidl just opened or just arrived here. Both of these stores are very, when you look at Harris Teeter and Publix, these stores are Spartan in comparison in terms of decor. And you went shopping at Lidl's new location in Greenville, South Carolina. Aside from being no frills, how do they differ from each other, Lidl and Aldi?
It's funny. Over time, as the two retailers start to collide, they're actually looking much more similar to each other. But largely speaking, Lidl stores for now are significantly larger than Aldi. So Lidl stores are about 36,000 square feet, so a little bit smaller than your standard supermarket, whereas Aldi stores, existing stores, are probably about 15,000 square feet. So that's the big difference. What that allows Lidl to do is kind of position themselves, like I said, as a small supermarket. So you're going to see a bigger assortment of fresh produce, although Aldi's trying to counter there. Lidl, one of their big claims to fame in their European stores is their fresh bakeries. So they've brought those over here to the U.S. So when you walk into a store, you're immediately greeted with this wonderful smell of freshly baking breads and
Does that offset the Spartan nature of the place? Suddenly you're hit with this aroma of fresh bread and you forget that it's not fancy decorations that you're looking at?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, I think it's important to clarify, though, that while these stores are Spartan and they're certainly very basic and they have a little bit of a warehouse feel, they're nevertheless very attractive. The fixturing is very nice. The displays are very nice. There's a lot of natural light. The aisles are wide. So both Lidl and Aldi, work really hard to kind of walk that fine line between a store that is Spartan and therefore less costly to operate, but still attractive, and to create that positive experience for shoppers.
And in writing about these two stores, particularly about Lidl, you mentioned two things leapt off the page to me. One was the treasure hunt aspect that shoppers seem to enjoy at Lidl, which I'd like you to talk about, and the fact that at Lidl, at least, private labels raise the game. Start with the treasure hunt aspect of this.
Right. So the treasure hunt component of the trip is really part of Lidl's bread and butter. This is something that they've been doing in Europe for decades. And basically, how that manifests is they have about 20% of their stores, their square footage, is devoted to a rotating assortment of really high quality general merchandise, and you have no idea week to week what it's going to be. I mean, it's really varied. It could be anything from designer apparel to workout gear to power tools. It's very high quality merchandise, again, so that creates that sense of delight and surprise, very much like what you would see at a Costco or a Sam's.
Right.
So it creates that atmosphere of, I better go back because who knows what cool stuff they're going to have next week. So that's part number one. The private label piece is, you know, again, that's again core to their strategy. About 90% of the assortment in the stores is private label, and again, it's very high quality. And I think what Lidl is trying to do, and Aldi for that matter, is challenge that kind of unwritten expectation that shoppers have in their heads that if I want to get low prices on private label, I have to be willing to sacrifice quality. Lidl saying, you know what, that's not the case at all. Hmm. You can get low prices and get high quality, especially on some of their more premium, premium private brands. So, I think that really gets at the heart of what makes these two retailers so disruptive is really challenging quote unquote tried and true value equation to say that, you know what, the shopper doesn't have to get any trade-offs. They can have both.
So Phil Lempert, Katie Peralta here, sitting at my desk here, reported earlier this month that Lidl released a study they did with UNC Chapel Hill, finding that when they enter a new market, competing grocers respond by lowering their food prices by an average of 9%. Now, that's a Lidl study. They commissioned the study. Do you think it's true?
Absolutely. And when you take a look, I think it was actually 8.9% across the board. But also on certain items like milk, they actually reduced their price by 50% to be able to combat this. I think what Mike pointed out was very important as far as private label. About 90% of what's in Aldi and Lidl is their own brand, and their own brands are award-winning products. Lidl this year, since the beginning of last year, last January, has won something like 300 medals for their wines. Their fresh food is extraordinary. So in Lidl's case, what they really want to do with the store design, with that adventure that Mike talked about with their private label, is they're dead on the mark for millennials and Generation Z, who are brand agnostic, number one, who care about quality, who care about what's hot. Lidl signing this deal with Heidi Klum to be able to have her, fashion wear in their stores is really positioning themselves perfectly for millennials and Generation Z.
So if you're a traditional grocery store and you are you have overhead because you have these bigger stores, fancy stores, more employees perhaps, and Lidl comes in and you have to lower your prices by 9%, what does that do to you?
Well, you have to understand that while 9% might seem like a lot, because everybody always talks about that the net profit of a supermarket is between 1 and 1.5%. That's their net profit. That's not their gross profit. In certain categories such as deli and so on, I mean, their gross is 30 to 40%. So there is room to lower prices. There's no question about it. And again, what we're seeing now with blockchain, with other efficiencies, is we're taking a lot more waste out of the system. Walmart taught supermarkets probably 30 years ago how to reduce waste. Now we're seeing it more with Aldi, with Lidl, with new technologies. So yes, they have to lower prices, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily going to go out of business. It means that they're becoming more efficient on their back end as well.
So BusinessInsider.com did a 2015 study which found Walmart's prices were about 30% higher than Aldi's. Wow. A 2014 price study found that prices at Aldi were about 22% cheaper than Kroger. We don't have a Kroger. We do have a Harris Teeter. They're owned by Kroger. But even if Aldi's prices are 22% cheaper than Harris Teeter or Publix, do the primary shoppers at those stores care? In other words, if you're a Harris Teeter or you're a Publix shopper, are you necessarily shopping for low prices?
I think going back to what Phil said about being price agnostic as a characteristic of some shoppers versus maybe families, moms, people who kind of have their brand loyalty, the things I always want my, Tide and I want my Charmin or things like that. Mm-hmm. I think they're not going to necessarily care if a you know, if an item is 250 versus 275 or yeah, whatever it is. I can't do math that quickly right. in my head, but I'm not sure if that would necessarily be the make or break point for them, especially if it's a customer that is or who is a little bit, you know, more higher income than someone who might be shopping at an Aldi or a Lidl.
They're not clipping coupons anyway.
Probably not. Maybe they are. But I also wanted to touch on something that Phil mentioned about the brand agnostic shopper. Something that he told me this summer is when you, you know, if you do like a side-by-side comparison, and I would challenge anyone in Charlotte to do this. It's kind of fun, even if you're not a grocery nerd. But if you go to a Lidl and then you go to a Harris Teeter, you'll notice that at Lidl, for instance, they had like five or maybe four or five different types of ketchup bottles. You know, it was like the low sugar, the larger bottle, the smaller bottle, and, you know, maybe some flavor like, spicy. I have no idea. But you go to Harris Teeter and there were nearly 30 different types of ketchup. And you're standing there and thinking, why do I need all of these choices? You know, I think that that can sometimes be a little bit crippling for for shoppers, excuse me. So that's kind of one example of just like, do we need all of this?
But if it disappeared and your choice disappeared, like my Schweppes in 6-ounce bottle, you would be upset. That's why.
Perhaps, yes.
They have spoiled this rotten.
Well, go ahead. But Mike, you're not going to be upset because you're going to order it from Amazon or somebody else. Let's not forget, and Katie brings up a great point, you know, for Tide, for Charmin toilet paper, for these name brands that we can't live without, you know, we're starting to order them more online. And as we get into, you know, smart refrigerators and smart cupboards that automatically replenish, we don't want to go to a store and carry, you know, 24 bottles of water. That's just kind of silly. So let's not forget that whole aspect is really going to be replacing some of those things. So you can still get your Schweppes, and you can have it delivered to you, and you might even save money on it. So, you know, this is the good news because the store can really focus on the fresh items, the more exciting foods, if you would.
When we come back, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to look at this Amazon Whole Foods marriage and talk about some of the predictions of the coming apocalypse in grocery stores as we reach critical mass and things begin to collapse on each other, and some future trends as well. Stay with us at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about store wars, grocery store wars happening in Charlotte as we grow and more chains come in here and lower cost grocery retailers have arrived. Katie Peralta is with us from the Charlotte Observer. Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, is here. Mike Paglia, director of Retail Insights at Kantar Retail, who also follows grocery stores, is with us as well. Lise in Salisbury emails, I'd like to dispel the idea that Harris Teeter is more expensive. They are quite on par cost-wise with Food Lion, but miles above Food Lion as to store stock and staff quality. Emily emails, I am a Charlotte native, but recently moved back from living in Minneapolis for 3 years. While living there, I frequently shopped at Co-op grocery stores, which are popular in Minneapolis. Can you talk about the place that Co-op stores might have in Charlotte, if at all? And I don't know who to take that to.
I don't think we have any. I know that they're big in big urban areas. Oh. Smaller markets have them too. No, that's not true. Excuse me. Now I'm thinking of a few in my head. I know that farmers have them. Farmers have like their own network of co-ops. But they're not like stores you can walk into. That's my understanding. There's like pickup locations where you get like actually, that was a story that I did last month. Tim Belk has an organic farm, actually, and his daughter is running a co-op that basically you pay like – you know, $25, $30 a month, and they customize an order for you of fresh produce, eggs, milk, things like that, and then you pick it up somewhere in Charlotte. I'm not sure if they've expanded that, but I know that there are others like that. But brick-and-mortar co-op stores I do not think exist here.
One of the big surprises in recent years in the grocery store industry has been the purchase of Whole Foods by Amazon, by Jeff Bezos. How many Whole Foods stores do we have here in Charlotte?
Three.
So when
in
they,
the Charlotte Metro.
How much and on what items did they lower prices when Amazon came in?
Quote unquote everyday items. Your, you know, milk, bread, things like that. They've started to promote other savings opportunities, like at Christmas they lowered prices on things like poinsettias and, you know, holiday like eggnog and things like that. They're lowering prices on their red roses for Valentine's Day.
What kind of impact, Mike, has this had, this purchase by Amazon of Whole Foods? What has it had on both Whole Foods and on grocery shopping around the country?
Well, I mean, I think, frankly, I think a lot of retailers and manufacturers are still trying to kind of wrap their heads around it. But I think it really sends a very clear message in that Amazon is serious about becoming a mainstream grocer, just like a Walmart or a Kroger or anyone else. What I think it also demonstrates is that not only are they capable of acquiring, you know, a large scale, very well known, very well established retailer, but it also shows that they view the roles of a brick and mortar store differently. Insofar as, and I think their ultimate plan for Whole Foods is, yes, it's still going to be a supermarket, you know, geared towards more affluent shoppers and whatnot, but it's also a fantastic distribution point. So, you know, a shopper can go place an order on Amazon, and now they can go pick it up at their local Whole Foods, which they may have been going to anyway. It's also a fantastic opportunity for Amazon to kind of trial and test, you know, new initiatives, new pricing schemes, new marketing efforts. So I think it just shows that they view stores as kind of a bit of a laboratory, which, you know, frankly, we're not used to viewing stores that way. So this is something new.
I want to come back to this online ordering and grocery store pickup of your groceries in a second, because I think there's something underlying that perhaps we have, the grocery stores have thought about, but we haven't thought about. But I'll come back to that in a second. Phil, Amazon and Whole Foods, on the surface, seem like very different companies with very different strategic plans and very different corporate outlooks. How's this acquisition working behind the scenes? Have customers noticed? Have they complained about anything? How has it been inside the culture of these two organizations?
Well, Mike, you're right. There's no question that John Mackey and Jeff Bezos don't have the same strategy, don't have the same management, don't have the same mind thing. So I'm sure that there's lots of heads rolling. In fact, I was just with Walter Robb, who's the ex-co-CEO of Whole Foods, and in my opinion, and I wrote this, he's the one who should have stayed, and they should have gotten rid of John Mackey. You know, and I think that culturally, they're at odds. Also, there's an initiative that started well before Amazon even got involved with Whole Foods about inventory, about, you know, really back end. And as a result, there's been a lot of Whole Foods stores that have, you know, out of stocks. Their stores, you know, have empty shelves on them as a result of this. And as a result, customers are really wondering. A lot of fault is being given to Amazon. Amazon had really nothing to do with this. And also, we're starting to see a lot of disgruntled employees at Whole Foods as well. So I think that this is being a very tough transition, and they've got to do something relatively soon. Otherwise, you know, the purchase price that they paid is not going to really prove out. Now, to Mike's point, I agree totally that what they really bought is 470 distribution points for putting their lockers, so you can buy the gazillion things that you want from Amazon. So you go into Whole Foods, you know, you go to their grocery aunt, you have lunch, you have dinner, you do your shopping, and on the way out, you know, you pick up your lawnmower or whatever. Also, keep in mind that for delivery, this gives them, again, these 470 points where they can just deliver right to your door. Now, Whole Foods was one of the early investors in Instacart. Their relationship with Instacart these days is very shaky. I'm sure that you're going to see Amazon delivering themselves and breaking that deal as soon as they can. So, you know, this whole idea of having groceries delivered in an hour or less for those people who live within 10 miles of, of the Whole Foods is huge. And also, you know, when you look at the overlays, 90% of Amazon Prime members live within 10 miles or less of a Whole Foods store. So you put all those metrics together, and again, to Mike's point, they bought distribution points. They didn't buy stores. And this can really build Amazon and Whole Foods business together in a unique way.
Which leads me to the apocalypse, because analysts have said that up to this point, grocery stores have not suffered from e-commerce in the same way that traditional department stores and clothing stores have, because people want to squeeze the tomatoes and they want to check out that piece of steak before they buy it. But you've got people willing to call Harris Teeter now and say, here's my list, you fill it, I'll come pick it up. They're willing to call to get online with Amazon and list what they want and come pick it up. It's one thing to do that with Charmin or Bounty paper towels. It's another thing to pick out your fruits and vegetables and your fresh meats and let somebody else do it for you and pick it up. So Amazon, I think, has this underlying, as you just alluded to, Phil, this underlying scheme that they can use these grocery stores they bought as distribution points, which lessen their cost in distribution, one would think. But it also gets people accustomed to not having to go to a brick-and-mortar store. So my question is this. That's good for Amazon. Is it good for Harris Teeter and Publix? I mean, if you make that service available to your customer, will the day come when they don't expect to ever walk into your store?
No, I doubt that. You know, right now sales, and you look at the estimates, 2-4% of groceries are sold online. There's some wild things that have come out since the FMI midwinter that says that 70% of all, you know, people are going to be buying groceries online. I doubt that. I think that the number, frankly, over the next 5 years will up to probably 10-12%. We like going into stores. That's number one. But also, don't forget about technology. Walmart just filed a patent for a new device, or a new system, sorry, that basically they'll do your online shopping. But unlike Instacart or Shipt or any of the others, what they basically do is they have their shopper take a picture of that head of lettuce or of that tomato or of that steak, and they will send it to you as a three-dimensional picture on your phone, and you can then approve it or not. So again, keep in mind, the more that we're talking, we've got more of this technology evolving so quickly that we might not have to go into that store because, you know, rather than just sending you a text that says, oh, we're out of stock of the Schweppes, you know, 6 ounce, they'll send you a picture of that steak, of those things that you really care about that has not translated well to online shopping.
It would seem to me, Katie, that younger people would be more open to shopping this way online and having somebody else pick out your groceries and you can come pick them up or they can be delivered to your door. On the other hand, millennials are more interested in the experience than they necessarily are the price. Talk about that.
Again, I have trouble with the generalization of millennials because I am a millennial.
They spend more on experiences than they do on products. So.
Sure. Cooking is an experience. Yeah. Going out to eat is an experience.
I'd rather go out.
A lot of people would agree with you. I think it depends on the demographic of millennial. You know, if it's a more affluent person, maybe they go grocery shopping once a week.
But there's a reason that the new Harris Teeter on South Boulevard is not just a grocery store, and it doesn't look like the Taj Mateeter or the Temple of Food out at Moorcroft. It has a salad bar, a fresh food bar. They have a chef in house. They have a beer and wine bar. They have a Starbucks. There's a reason for that, because that's where it's located, in the heart of millennial country.
Yeah, I walk to that one sometimes just to get, you know, a thing of ice cream or a bottle of wine, because it's that convenient and it's nice and it's clean and it's pretty, and they have a bar with craft beer. The one at Moorcroft, the one on Queens and Providence or whatever that is, has like a $5 wine night on Fridays. I think it's wine or maybe it's beer, but people go there on dates. They have like a live piano. So it's become more of a destination. It's like a hangout.
So is this happening around the country as well, Michael? Is this what people want now? They want to go and have food. They want to go and have dinner in the grocery store restaurant. They want to go after work and sit around a bar at the grocery store and have a glass of wine or a glass of beer. Is that what's happening?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I wouldn't quite say it's widespread, but I mean, you certainly see this happening in other parts of the country as well, whether they, you know, you'll regularly see stores that have community events. Like you said, they might have full service restaurants attached to them. They might have, you know, other, you know, and stores are really trying to, you know, kind of reposition themselves as community centers. But I think we're kind of alluding to a really fundamental point here, and I think this ties back to the delivery question we were talking about earlier, and it's that, you know, if you think about it this way, you know, Amazon trying to get into grocery delivery, particularly around perishables, that's a convenience play, right? And in order to make shoppers' lives easier. What smart brick-and-mortar retailers are trying to do is to tap into, and we've talked about this a little bit, particularly around millennials, they're trying to tap into that growing demand for experience. And you know, we've just rattled off half a dozen different ways that retailers can do that. And I think it kind of shows kind of a divergence here, is that some retailers are going to be focused, particularly online retailers, are going to be focused on convenience. But really smart brick-and-mortar retailers are going to try to offset that by right. offering an experience that really no website can match. And so I think it's really smart when you see Harris Teeter or Publix or Whole Foods trying to do these sorts of things. It shows me that they kind of have their they're kind of taking the long-term view here, and I think that's really smart.
We have 3 minutes left, and I want to touch on something that Nakisa on Facebook has written about. She says, or he says, I'm not sure which it is, while for some in Charlotte it is true that access to healthy foods and grocery stores are nearby, it's not true for everyone. There are corridors that do not have the luxury of having access to Harris Teeter or Publix or Whole Foods or anything other than a convenience store. We have these food deserts. So when a Lidl, when an Aldi comes into a market, and they're causing other grocers to cut prices because they are low-cost grocers, why aren't they locating in those food deserts with their lower prices?
I'm really glad this reader asked that. I was hoping we would talk about this, but it's something that they have not clearly answered, honestly. Their locations, you'll see, are in somewhat kind of random areas. If you're looking at where Lidl is right now, they have a store, a property that they built in Southend that is kind of sitting vacant. But you'd think about some of the more food insecure areas where you have to drive you know, literally miles to get to your nearest Walmart, or you have to take a bus or something like that. So the only access that folks have in those areas to food is a Family Dollar or a gas station, virtually no access to fresh fruit. And if there is, then a lot of the times these smaller stores can drive up prices if they want to. So it's a really tough situation for the folks who, you know, who aren't seeing the benefits of these grocery wars.
So in the 90 seconds we have left, Grace on Facebook says, we would love to see Wegmans come to Charlotte. Best private label products ever. Where is Wegmans? And there is a new store coming. It's already here, Sprouts. So talk about Wegmans and Sprouts really quickly.
I have people asking about Wegmans literally once a week. It's in, I think, Cary or Raleigh. They have come to North Carolina. Sprouts opens here next month. It's like a Phoenix-based organic grocer. I will let people know when Wegmans is coming. If they are, I'm not sure if that's the case, but I check in with them literally a couple times a month.
And why, Rebecca wants to know why there aren't more grocery stores uptown. Center City Partners wants people to live there, but there's no place to do some basic shopping like for food. But there is a Harris Teeter uptown. Isn't there another one coming?
There's a Harris Teeter. There's a Whole Foods under construction across from the NASCAR Plaza.
And Trader Joe's is not too far away.
And Publix has said that they want to be uptown too, so...
Okay, well, I get this. I guess we'll do part four of this in the near future, given that the fact that this thing seems to be ongoing and unchanging. I want to thank Mike Paglia, who is the Director of Retail Insights at Kantar Retail, for being with us from Boston. Phil Limpert, supermarket analyst and founder of SupermarketGuru.com, joined us from Santa Monica, and Katie Peralta from the Charlotte Observer. She walked here. Thank you all for the hour.